Well, I missed him last week, but I've got him today. Hello, Dennis Stewart. Nice
Hello,
to have you.
Hello, my dear. Hello, my dear. Well, I'm glad to hear that you missed me.
I did.
Very chuffed.
Well, you were here. I wasn't. So today, yes. Last time you spoke about the potential benefit of tomatoes as a functional food. Today you want to talk about the remarkable potential benefit of turmeric as a functional food. But before you do so, you want to emphasise again the meaning of functional foods and a modern term that is being used to describe them.
Look, I think it's important that we keep emphasising this, that food was always meant to be your best medicine. That statement goes back to the great Greek medical practitioner and philosopher, and there's a lot of truth in it, but we've lost sight of that, I believe, even within natural medicine. I believe that has happened to a degree. But the concept of the functional food definition is that it emphasises that food is more than just something that you put in your mouth and chew and enjoy, and something more than just keeping your body going. A functional food is a food that has a specific benefit in dealing preventatively or treatment-wise with various disease processes. Food is your best medicine. Functional foods mean a group of foods, which are increasingly being very well defined and spoken about, that have been shown to be useful, potentially useful, and sometimes definitely useful, as I've said, in helping prevent disease and also in helping to treat disease. Now, that term, functional food, has been, if you like, given a more academic or acceptable term, perhaps. We all relate to pharmaceuticals. What is now referred to as nutraceuticals, is the modern term that is being used to describe functional foods, foods that are nutritional but also have a bracket of benefit, as I've said, in helping to treat disease and prevent disease. That term, in my opinion, has been particularly made famous in the works of the two French Canadians that I have mentioned on this program for many years, and that is Richard Bellevue and Denis Gingras. Both of them are French-Canadians working in Quebec in a research environment, in a university environment, where their life's work, as I understand, has been climaxed in the writing of that book that I've mentioned occasionally, and I will put it up on the screen eventually just so listeners can get hold of it more easily. But they're a book which is, I consider, to be a classic in discussing the concept of functional foods, or what they have defined as nutraceuticals. Their book, Foods That Fight Cancer, Preventing and Treating Cancer Through Diet, by the two French Canadians, they have used that term and, in my opinion, promoted it in their literature, in their books, by using the term nutraceutical to refer to functional foods. I come back to it. Foods that can be shown, as evidenced in their writing, as a food that can help prevent, as in the case, for instance, of men taking on board, that the regular proper eating, and I say regular proper eating of the tomato, can be argued to be a very useful preventative device for helping fight common prostate problems, including prostate cancer. Is it a cure? They do not say so. Is it a cure? I do not say so, but I agree with what they point out and have mentioned in their book, that the tomato that we'll talk again briefly on in a moment, by containing lycopene, that remarkable substance found in it, has been shown to have a good basis for explaining why certain ethnic groups who use a lot of tomato, when we're talking about Mediterranean people, using a traditional Mediterranean emphasis, where tomato plays a very important part, their incidence of prostate cancer is seemingly much less. Today we'll be talking about another functional food, and that is turmeric, which contains a very exciting principle in it, not the same as lycopene, but equally exciting as far as its potential as a preventative agent as well as a treatment agent. Fascinating topic, you know.
It is really fascinating.
You can talk about it all day.
I'm very interested in this one for sure. So we've got Peter from Blackhalls Park on the line. Hi, Peter. How can we help you?
Oh, good afternoon to you both. And, yes, Dennis, Orby, six or seven years ago now, you were the only ones who could lead me in the right direction when I had Ross River virus.
Oh, yes.
And your advice, including all things we talk about, but that book was the greatest thing that it just suggested to me. And I've now given that to probably four or five of my dearest friends as a gift.
Good on you.
It is brilliant. Not only do they explain what the foods are, but they will line up certain greens against each other and then
yes.
nominate which green has the most powerful...
Exactly.
..of the chemicals within them, you know.
Correct.
And it put me onto green tea. Well, out of that book, they spend seven pages in that book.
It's a great discussion, isn't it? A great discussion.
Devotee, I will sit at lunch today and have a full teapot full.
You're not on your own.
I get the stuff imported from Japan.
Good on you.
And it's a wonderful thing. Absolutely wonderful, that book. I couldn't recommend it highly.
Well, I'm glad you've rang in and said that because, as you know, I don't, how can I call it, promote books for any profit.
Yeah,
I promote and mention books for listener health.
Yeah.
And that book, and I repeated again,
yeah.
The book Foods That Fight Cancer by Bellevue and Gingras is exactly what you've said, a remarkable
yeah.
text that sensibly presents the way in which functional foods, as I refer to them, have a role to play, an important role to play, in preventing and even treating disease. And you've proved it, Peter, by writing in today, ringing in today. I'm so pleased you did that.
Yeah, now, you're the only one out of all the professionals I went to could handle me and just tell me what to do with my Ross River virus.
Well, thank you, Peter.
And you got me on the Astragalus 8, which is another one of your wonder drugs.
Yeah.
And turmeric, another one of yours.
Yeah, turmeric. Well, you know them all. You'll be setting up shortly.
No, I just pass on what I've learned from you.
Well done.
That's exactly what I do.
Well done. Well done, my dear friend.
Anyway, thanks again. And,
good on you.
I'm 87 now and I'm kicking goals.
Well, you're only 1 or 2 years in front of me. Well, we're both kicking goals. You're heading for the big 9-0 and you never know. We might get the telegram, although I'm not sure they give telegrams these days. It might be a personal telephone call from the king himself.
Might be the next one too.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your call, Peter.
Quick little thing, Dennis.
Yes.
When I turned 80, which was after the event, virtually or near enough that time,
I said,
I'm now the 20-year plan man.
Well, how about that? And this book may well have helped you do that.
Well, I think so. It's a good positive attitude.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
Okay.
Thank you, Peter, so much. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye.
Next we have Alan from Fern Bay on the line. Hi, Alan, how can we help you?
Yes, a friend of mine, he's got first stages of dementia, and I was reading an article about Himalayan honey. It may have some sort of effect on that. I was just going to ask Dennis' opinion.
Okay, look, you'll not get anything from me that would be negative about that. All that I would say is that I think it's a bit much to put a particular name to the honey. All honeys, as far as I'm concerned, from my reading and studying and teaching on it, and even manufacturing product on that knowledge, all honeys, I believe, have profound benefits in resisting what I would refer to as the aging process. And I am convinced, that's why I'm a beekeeper and my family's a beekeeper, I'm convinced that the wisdom going right back to the Greeks and before that, the Ayurvedic people from the Indus Valley civilization in the north of India, the most ancient people in the world, were experimenting and using honey then and treating diseases with it then and using it as a device to promote focus, concentration, and to develop what we would call all the cognitive faculties. Now, of course, in modern times, we all laugh at that. We're a sad civilization now because we have a tendency to laugh at the wisdom and the tradition of all that went before us. I believe that's half of our problem today, without getting wound up on it, is simply because we've lost respect for a lot of this wisdom that goes right back to perhaps the experience of people living in the Himalayas, that honey was useful, continues to be useful, in treating what we loosely refer to as dementia. I don't dispute it, but I would argue strongly that all pure honey, now let me emphasise, all pure honey, without being processed to death, has the potential to participate in maintaining cognitive activity and maintaining a resistance to disease. I have so much literature, Alan, and so many treasured books on the therapeutic benefits of honey that I have no problem in concurring with what you've said there. But I come back to the fact that all honeys share similar characteristics, albeit there may well be something in the Himalayan honey that is a little bit different and distinctive and gives them an edge in this area, in the same way that Manuka honey, made famous by the New Zealanders, has been shown to be probably the most effective antimicrobial honey, and popularly used now increasingly, at least in the English-speaking world, to address infections and ulcers and other conditions that are unresponsive to modern medical applications. So I come back to the point that I will not in any way at all poo-hoo what you have said. I have too much respect for Himalayan literature and tradition, for the Buddhist culture, and the whole traditional way of looking at life, to in any way at all disrespect it. But having used that for supporting honey, I would encourage people to see honey as being more than just a pleasant something to put on one's toast. See it as something with perhaps what the Himalayan honey has, some ability to resist cognitive decline.
Okay, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks very much, Alan. Next, we've got Wayne on the line from Woodville. Hi, Wayne, you want to make a comment about tomatoes?
I did. I just wanted to be very, very much focused on tomatoes, and I appreciate what Dennis does with honey. Great news. Good
stuff.
Thank
you, Wayne. Thank you. Thank you, Wayne.
I have met you with my wife at your studio four times.
Really?
And I gave it up to you. I wasn't there for any other agenda. But I did mention to you that I actually found a herbicide that was made from tomato. Uh-huh. And not the fruit of the tomato. It's actually a nightshade.
Yes, that's correct.
So what do you do with the plant? What do you do with the actual tomato plant other than the fruit of that plant? It is very, very poisonous. It's very harmful to mankind.
I would agree. The tomato, being a member of the nightshade family, has a potential, if it's poorly used and if the wrong part is used, for being problematical. Fortunately, like other plants, the eggplant, for instance, it also belongs to the nightshade family, and the potato. Fortunately, the parts of those foods which belong to the nightshade family that we eat are, if you like, the fruits of them, which are less problematical. But certainly the foliage of them may well have some toxic potential that makes them useful as a pesticide, but certainly not something useful for the human organism.
Absolutely not. And the reason why I call, I was not on an agenda about using tomato plant as a herbicide, but reality is it's not only an antioxidant and it has pharmaceutical purposes. Mm. Facts of the matter are it can be used as a herbicide that takes away a chemical uses of glyphosate, and that's a $42 billion industry throughout the world. And we're trying to reduce chemicals. Why aren't we not using the herbal medicine, not just for humans, but using it for the plant, the actual environment we live in?
Wayne,
why
I think,
are we not doing that?
Wayne, I think you would know my answer to that. There may be
no, I don't.
There may be no money in it for the big boys that dictate what we use for ourselves and what we use for our agriculture. I believe very, very strongly that in nature there is sufficient to be able to handle most of the problems that we experience as humans and what we experience in agriculture. But it all comes down, and I'm not being cynical, I can't afford to be cynical. I've got too many children, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I've got to be confident, and perhaps crises like that which we're working through now might point us in a different direction, realising that technology is not necessarily the only answer. I believe very, very strongly in the fact that within plants there are strong pesticidal substances as well as substances that can also be used for fertiliser. But the society in which we live is based on an economy and an economic structure which has to make money. And I argue that just as herbal medicine has been largely marginalised, in my opinion, by virtue of it not being a money-making concern for Big Farm, so I'd like to throw it out there for discussion that one of the reasons why this seems to be, and you notice I'm using very conservative language here, there seems to be, if you like, a disinterest in looking at nature to look for the things that could easily and economically be used. That's my personal opinion. I could be wrong.
Thank you so much for your call, Wayne.
So, Frank, but at the same time, Dennis is not a doctor, neither am I, but we both understand the fact that herbal teas do actually have an impact on mankind.
Oh,
but
without a doubt.
There's no money in it. Yep. There is no money in it for anybody.
Yep.
The facts of the matter are, when you make a discovery, where do you take that discovery to? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, it's like this. If you were to make a discovery that you demonstrated had great efficacy, and if you wanted then to have that noted and produced and promoted as a medicine, the first loop that you would have to jump over was to convince the registration organisations in this country to give credit to what you have said. And
that
the first
does not work. I've been to the APVMA. Right.
Yeah.
I work under a permit 7250.
Yep.
Right. Yep. That allows me to work.
Yep.
Without a crop, not working within a field of the crops, working within the bush. Mm. And I work under a permit 7250 from APVMA.
Good on you.
Can you help me? Where do I get the next step? Does that go to just putting it out there as a discussion paper? What happens? Because I need help.
Well, I think there are a series of steps that one would take.
Okay. Tomato bush is the best herbicide known to man.
What I would suggest you do is, first of all, document it, not only in your own experiments, but also...
documented over the last 2 years.
Well, document it and move to the next step. And that could be a big step, but you've got to get people on side. And I'm not a political person, but the first thing I would say is contact your local member and say, listen, have I got something for you?
Now, because, went there 18 months ago.
Well, you go again. Keep knocking on the door. There's an old saying, and you would appreciate it. It's the squeaky gate that gets the oil. Okay. All the best with it anyway,
Good
Wayne.
Luck with that, Wayne. We've got Margaret from Rankin Park on the line. Hi, Margaret. You've got, you want to know what's beneficial for sinus problems?
That's right, yes. I've had, it's been ongoing for a long time. And, yes, I take an antihistamine every single day,
oh dear,
which sort of helps a bit, but yes. I just wondered what else Dennis might recommend.
Margaret, do you have to use antibiotics frequently?
No, it's okay. Not that bad. But it's just constant, yes.
Okay.
So I've got a nasal spray.
Okay.
Yes. And I take the antihistamine.
Yes.
Okay.
Look, sinus is not, chronic sinus is not an easy condition to treat, as you've demonstrated. But yes. I'll mention a few things that could be useful that are accessible without a script and are economic. The first thing I would suggest, and if you are good on the net, you can have a look at what I'm going to mention here and see that it tends to be confirmed by what I'm saying. But interestingly, one of the most useful devices for addressing chronic sinusitis is a combination of an enzyme from the pineapple, known as bromelain, and a bioflavonoid called quercetin, which is found in many fruits and vegetables. So that one of my standard support treatments for a chronic upper respiratory tract problem such as sinus would be to recommend that the patient or client go on a course of the regular taking of quercetin and bromelain, having a specific antimicrobial and healing effect on the inflamed membrane, and quercetin being very useful as a supportive agent to resist allergic challenge and also to support the body in its fighting of inflammatory activity in the sinuses. I could be a little bit more complicated than that, but I won't. But you can understand why down the road at my rooms we have this preparation, as our good pharmacies and health food stores would probably have also, a preparation that would need to be taken and taken preventatively, not just episodically. It is not expensive, a couple of times a day, ideally taken between meals and in the right dosage. I can't off the top of my head mention the right dosage, but there's a standard dosage on the label which we follow. As well as that, I follow the recommendations, as far as herbs are concerned, of that from the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia. And I recommend two herbs as being very useful. I've demonstrated this over many years. The herb eyebright. Now, you might think that eyebright, this has to do with the eyes. Yes, it does. But eyebright is also a herb that has benefits on the whole of the upper respiratory tract, sinuses. Certainly, it's useful for eye conditions, particularly as a topical agent. But as an oral medication, it's useful again to build up resistance, usually in combination with the herb elder. Elder flowers we see everywhere growing, and they are converted into a liquid preparation, and the two of those things can be presented in an encapsulated form, or a professional herbalist such as myself or others in the town would put it together in a liquid formulation with a specific dose. I would see those two approaches using the nutritional approach of quercetin and bromelain with the herbal medicine approach of eyebright and elder being something worthwhile trying. It will not, let me emphasise, it will not clash with what your good medicos have prescribed for you, because that is standard medicine that they've prescribed, but as something that could be complementary to it, this could give you additional.
Try.
Well, it's worth a try, but let me just say, as I've always said to many people, when you come to herbal medicine, if you have had a chronic problem, you must realise that that chronic problem is not suddenly overnight going to dissipate. Herbal medicine is referred to in our literature as a gentle medicine. Its benefits can be very, very positive, but the time factor, and we're not talking about years, we're talking perhaps a couple of months given a trial on these, usually is able to give you an indication of, well, hey, this is doing something. If we can't guarantee it, but the cost involved is minimal. The treatment, in my opinion, is extraordinarily safe and very complementary to what you're presently doing.
Wonderful. Sounds good. And the quercetin that you mentioned, how do you spell that?
Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin.
Okay, quercetin, yep, okay. All and right. You've got, so both of those remedies I can get at your room?
Well, I would think so, but as always on the program, I encourage listeners to seek out their own pharmacist or health food store, but where that's not possible, well, my rooms at Ullampton can be accessible.
Wonderful. Okay, lovely. All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Now we've got Margaret from Clarencetown on the line. Hi, Margaret. You are looking for suggestions for treating depression.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hello, Mary. How can we help you?
Yeah. I've got a couple of family members that have depression. They're on antidepressant tablets from the doctor. I'm just wondering if there's anything, you know, like a tea or a drink or something that may just help. I mean, I know mental health's can be very detrimental, you know, to overall health. Just wondering if maybe vitamins or something help.
Mary, I know a fair bit about this topic, and I'll not elaborate why, but look, you have to be very, very cautious. Particularly when you're dealing with mental illness, because to be fair, the medications that are used today in managing depression are miles, in my opinion, are miles in front of what perhaps years ago was the standard treatment. The medical treatment for depression today is, in my opinion, the best treatment that should be accessed for serious depression. Yep. You would know where I'm coming from here, because mental health can take some strange turns and can cause significant agony and problems for the person suffering from it, but can equally cause great distress for families. I would suggest that if you're concerned, have a talk to your GP about using perhaps some specific nutrients. Brackets of the B vitamins, for instance, may be useful. But again, I come back to the point that under no circumstances think that taking a bit of this or a bit of that can take over from something that's probably helping your people live a reasonably normal life.
I wasn't ever thinking to suggest that they not take the tablet.
Yes.
I was only thinking that perhaps there was something that may
help them.
Something extra.
Something that they could take that wouldn't affect the tablets and may just boost the mood. I don't know if there's any...
Well, this is why I suggested that you have a talk to your GP about the B group vitamins.
Okay.
There are members of that group, of the B group, which have a useful role perhaps in helping people battle through this, may be functioning somewhat as a support. But again, even with vitamin therapy, one has to be cautious as to what one does when a person is on specifically designed medication for depression.
Okay, yep. Okay. We've got to make sure it doesn't interfere with the...
Exactly. But look, I know where you're coming from, Mary, in a more personal way than what you think. The advice that I've given you is based on a lot of personal insight.
Okay, yep.
Thank you so much for your call, Mary.
Can I just ask another quick question, that's possible?
Yes, of course.
Is there anything that's good for skin? My daughter has very, very sensitive skin. Seems to react to anything. I don't know if there's anything she can take or put on it.
Does she experience eczema?
Yes.
She does.
She's had it since she was a baby.
Yeah, so she's what we call an atopic individual. And look, I know this might sound simple, but it's a good starting base. The higher doses, encapsulated dosages of oil of evening primrose is a very underrated way of giving to eczema dermatitis, atopic individuals, a very good way of giving to them a substance that contains essential fatty acids, which in atopic individuals are argued to be deficient. Now, I have prescribed evening primrose oil capsules for very, very many years. Do they help in all cases? No. Do they help in some serious chronic cases? Yes. And the good thing about it is, again, they are bringing to the body nothing that would interfere with a treatment that might be being offered by a medical practitioner. It is complementary to what might be offered. It is very, very safe and a good starting base. There are specific herbs, one of which is a herb called heartsease. Heartsease, or Viola tricolor, as we refer to it botanically, is one of the leading oral medications that is used in Western herbalism for addressing chronic inflammatory and allergic type skin conditions. It can be taken as a tea, or probably better still, taken as a liquid extract where the dosage can be better regulated. There's a little bit of help for you, Mary.
Okay, thank you. Is evening primrose oil safe to take for, like, long term?
Far as I'm aware, there's no serious adversity associated with evening primrose oil. But every individual is an individual, and there's always the possibility of what we call idiopathic reactions. But the good thing about it, by virtue of it being able to be purchased without script, with very little regulations on it, all I can say is it's a very safe substance, and I can't recollect any of my patients or clients ever seriously reacting to it.
Would you use it together with the heartsease, or they?
I would start just with the oil of evening primrose as a good starting base. The problem I find with many individuals, and I'm not saying you're in this case, is that they start to throw everything that they hear of to a particular problem, rather than trying one thing at a time to see whether or not it does the trick. Using multiple substances can at times be confusing as well as being costly.
Thanks for your call, Mary. We really appreciate it. This is Health Naturally on 2NURFM. Now, you've got a rather provocative and perhaps radical view of the role of nutraceuticals in natural medicine. Can you talk about that?
Been a bit controversial today, hasn't it?
It has been a controversial day,
Some of the statements we've been making. Now, look, what I've been trying to do in this series is to revert to the idea, the strong idea, that health doesn't come necessarily out of a jar of supplements or come out of multiple preparations that one purchases from a pharmacy or a health food store. They're necessary. But my view is that the use of supplements and the use of purchased products is perhaps dominating our concept today of natural medicine. I believe that natural medicine should be re-emphasized as being something that is based on lifestyle, diet, and an understanding of substances such as nutraceuticals, not just going to the doctor, the naturopath, or the pharmacist and saying, look, I've got this, what can you give me? And then going and getting an armful of supplements and thinking that that is always the way of managing it. I think the industry, I know this is provocative, I think the industry perhaps has moved too far in the direction of looking at natural health as being built on an increasing number of supplements, many of which are expensive, and increasingly becoming so expensive that many of our dear listeners are not going to be able to afford many of these things if the cost spiral continues. We've got to get back to nutraceuticals, not putting down vitamins, minerals or supplements, far from it, but arguing there's a way that needs to be looked at more seriously. Nutraceuticals, functional foods, original naturopathy, called these days nutraceuticals.
We'll talk about that again in a couple of weeks. We'll
Thank
see you.
You
then. Health Naturally 2NURFM.